Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Folks, welcome to another edition of Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams, and Mike Williams is my co-host. And today we're visiting with Catherine McGee, who is a human resources person who's been working. She's a past chair of the National Human Resources Management, and she's now the president of the American Red Cross Santa Barbara chapter, has a new book called Leading People Through Disasters. And she's with us today to talk a little bit about her book and the content. And Mike, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, welcome to the show, Catherine.
Well, thank you very much for asking.
I guess we should point out, too, you were the chair of the Santa Barbara Grand Jury here for a couple of years, so you really have got the emergency services stuff down.
Well, I was four-person last year, but I served for 2 years.
So,
it was a wonderful experience.
It's interesting, I think.
That's so, because I've read many of the reports that came out of that. Speaking of reading, I took some time as I was flying the other day and read Leading People Through Disasters, an action guide written by yourself and Liz Guthridge. And I wanted to talk about that today because I think this book is fabulous. And one of the comments was right there in the foreword where it reads, planning is less painful than procrastination. Prevention generally requires less time and resources outlay and then intervention. And action is more effective and less costly than reaction.
Absolutely.
I mean, that seems like a no-brainer. And yet you go into a room full of HR people or professionals and you say that and they look at you with a blank stare.
Well, and the thing that's really scary is that when you talk to business leaders who will tell you that they don't have time and they'll get around to it. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Liz and I developed were around to it's. And so when people say, well, I'll get around to it, then you hand them around to it. And even with all the horror that's gone on around the world with respect to disasters, and you'd think people would be prepared, and they're still not. Huh. And they don't, it's like it won't happen to me. It's the whole denial thing, and that's more than just a river.
But it is happening, and it's happening with greater regularity. And the reason I picked that paragraph was we just had the VOAD drill 2 weeks ago, and the VOAD participants were primarily local businesses that in one level or another are engaged in the secondary support of disaster emergency management and or support functions. And it was amazing how many of those organizations would fall flat immediately after a disaster if they lost their communications. And that's something that's actually you can work on and fix.
Absolutely.
Prior to a disaster. There's many things that will happen that are unexpected that we'll talk about today, but that's one that's preventable in advance. And I don't know how many of those organizations will be back in 6 months to test again to see if they got their communications fixed. But,
right.
But what got you into writing this book and disaster emergency management to begin with? Because you come from a whole other world.
Right. My background, and Ted alluded to it, was in the field of human resources. And I worked for First Interstate Bancorp, and then predominantly with First Interstate Bank Limited, which was the wholesale division of the bank. And a long time ago, 1987, the earth moved, Whittier Narrows earthquake, and First Interstate, along with almost every other business in downtown Los Angeles, was not prepared. And so we undertook the development of a business continuity plan, and one of my staff members was involved in that. Human resources was on the team, but the senior leadership wasn't involved at the core team level. The following year, we did a drill, an earthquake drill, to get ready, and it was wonderful. It worked. It's described in the book. Everybody was happy. We learned a lot about that. 2 weeks later, at 11 o'clock at night, on a Wednesday night, the 12th floor became engulfed in flames because a computer shorted. And there's so much plastic in office buildings these mm-hmm. days that it just ran roughshod over that entire floor and burned up as high as the 16th floor. And LA City Fire and every other engine company around came and got that fire out. The fire chief said later that if they hadn't stopped it at 16, the whole building would have gone. So the end result was that from the 16th floor up, every floor was smoke damaged, and from the 12th floor down was incredible water damage. So between Wednesday night, when the EOC was set up, and they had practiced, remember, for an earthquake, not a building fire. But from Wednesday night at midnight, when the EOC went operational, by Monday morning, 3,000 employees had been relocated somewhere in downtown Los Angeles. It was an amazing effort. And so HR got involved, and I know you want to talk about this later, but we became involved in working with those 3,000 employees, including ourselves, and the rest of the 12,000 employees in the state who were impacted indirectly because their coworkers had been evicted, if you will, from their workspaces. So in hindsight, I, along with Liz Guthridge, the co-author, and about 10 other HR people who provided us stories that are in the book, we decided, because both of us had been through, not only I'd been through the earthquake, three different earthquakes in Southern California, and the building fire, and then along with the riots that occurred after the Rodney King trial, and then, oh yes, in 1993, when I was by that time working for Standard Chartered Bank, we had employees who had been impacted by the first World Trade Center bombing, and then I'll tell you later about the impact of that on the Standard Chartered employees who were impacted when Building 7 needed to be evacuated on 9/11. Well, so that's how I got involved. Long answer to a short question.
Well, it's interesting because all of these emergency management books that I've read or skimmed through or in the library, whatever mechanism, they all come from an operational police, fire, military, intelligence, that kind of mindset. This book comes from a whole different perspective.
Right.
There's nothing in here that's revolutionary or new, but it's the flavor and the definition of redefining where the priorities are from a corporate HR risk management point of view, not from an operational get everybody out of the building point of view. And it's refreshing. And I kind of came up with a new name for it, Corporate Emergency Management for Dummies. And because it has that kind of approach to it, it says, here's what you got to do, and here's what your priorities have got to be if you're going to stay in business and keep banking payroll and paying your bills and keeping your customer base, which is really what business is all about, is
right.
Making money. And that's why it's kind of refreshing to have a book that takes it from the business corporate point of view, not from the police, fire, military point of view, which is just get everybody out, contain, corral, and suppress. And so that's why we want to kind of focus on. So when we start looking at employees, and you got 3,000 plus employees that you got to relocate, plus you got to stay in business, how much downtime did First Interstate actually have from the perspective of me, the customer out there on the street? Did I even know any of this happened?
When the building burned, the main branch in the building at 6th and Hope in downtown LA obviously was closed. So those customers and employees obviously were impacted. But information went out as quickly as possible to the customers, and signs went up saying, please go to wherever. There was another branch close by in downtown LA. So the customers, the customers were impacted directly, however many hundreds of them that went to that branch. Employees were down Thursday and Friday. There was no place for them to go to work. However, we had foreign exchange traders who had been the function on the 12th floor of the building. And we had some of them on airplanes to Hong Kong, where we had a trading room. We had some on airplanes to London, where we had a trading room. And Bank of America picked up the rest for a while in their quarters.
So having some relationships with potential competitors, Bank of America being a competitor, actually worked out really well.
Yes, they were very generous, amongst others.
Well, very good. We're coming up to our first break here, visiting today with Catherine McKee, who's the president of Santa Barbara Chapter American Red Cross and the author, co-author, I should say, of Leading People Through Disaster, an action guide preparing for and dealing with the human side of crisis, available at Amazon.com. Up to our next break, Catherine McKee, our guest, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the Slide Pots on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live at the newspress.com internet site. See you in a minute.
Folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Catherine McKee. And she is a co-author of a new book called Leading People Through Disasters. And she's been involved with human resources for a long time. She's now the president of the American Red Cross Santa Barbara chapter. And she's the post chair nationally for the human resource management. And welcome to the show. Nice
Thank
to have you,
you
here.
It's nice
and,
to be here.
We're just kind of exploring the book. And Mike, you've got some stuff underlined
well,
there.
Well, another sentence I pulled out. We also have to recognize that the reality of safety doesn't always match the perception of some people. And I think that's true. We haven't never really talked about that. But my perception of danger is going to be different than yours. It's going to be different than yours based on my training and my experience and what I've been exposed to and the fact that I'm more alert and keen to certain things than others. But danger comes in many forms. I may not be as astute in economic danger that Catherine would be. She'd sit there and say, you're going to be broke in 6 months. I wouldn't pick up on that until 6 minutes. She's already telling me those kinds of things. So it's all a matter of perspective.
Absolutely.
And I think you can carry that a step further. That also applies to institutional mindset, whereas some businesses are going to be much more attuned. Certainly if First Interstate were still around, they would be more attuned to disaster thinking today than they would have been pre-earthquake, pre-structure fire, pre-9/11. How can we work on that? We were talking about that during the break, the mindset. And I mean, in the business world, it's about making money. So when you go in and you present a case about getting emergency management, the first question from the hardcore businessman is, what does any of this have to do with making money?
Well, it has everything to do with making money. And CFOs may be the ones that get the message. People that are involved in managing risk or approving the purchase of, say, liability insurance. What does your liability insurance cover? And when I talk to HR people or business leaders, it's really looking at what happens if you can't ship your product or your services cannot be provided for 3 days. How much cash do you have on hand? What if you can't access your line of credit? And that happened during Hurricane Katrina, where banks went down and they didn't have appropriate backup, so they couldn't access computer records. And I heard one CEO talk about how he went down to the bank where the bank branch was, even though it couldn't function, and gave money out. They got a hold of cash and actually did the old APG and anything, standing by a card table, and you'd come up and they'd say, okay, what do you need? And I can give you some money, and wrote it down on a piece of paper because they had to keep the
right
business going. They were semi-prepared. Organizations that have the need for IT are the ones that have put business continuity plans together, and it all has to do with technical backup. And that at least is a good thing. And when I go to business continuity conferences, those are the kind of people that are there. I'm the only one out on the speaking circuit that speaks to business continuity people about the human side, and then speak to HR people about the need for this kind of thing, and to get together with CFOs or the IT people, because they're the ones that understand how you need to keep the business up and running. And if you're not prepared, and I don't have the statistics at hand, but the businesses that are prepared are the ones that actually can get back up and running. The ones that aren't, many of them go out of business.
Well, I would think that the cost of going and dealing with this, I was just talking to a gentleman yesterday who's dealing with mass layoffs, which is not unlike a lot of organizations.
Yeah.
And mass layoffs are talked about in your book as being an emergency, and they are.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the comments that he made is that these companies that are doing mass layoffs, they're overlooking a major problem that they're creating for themselves, and that's cash flow, because you have to pay all these people's vacation and sick time and what have you. You have to pay that off as they leave. And in some cases, these organizations are self-insured for their unemployment, which would be a disastrous position to be in. But be that as it is, that's true. And so they are having huge problems in organizations. You've reached a point where you have to do massive layoffs for whatever the reasons may be, and now you got to pay all these people off. So you've just compounded your cash flow problem. You didn't have any cash to begin with. That's why you got to lay them off. And now you got to pay all these people off, and you aren't necessarily in a position where you can go borrow the money that you need to go pay them off. And you talk about this. It's when we talk about disasters, that's the kind of thing that makes it to the top in the business world.
Yeah.
And do you see businesses starting to get a little more receptive to that? Has there been any major examples of companies that said, whoa, we should have handled our layoffs a different way?
I believe that there are. I can't give you an example offhand, but I will tell you that what we learned at First Interstate was how to take care of people. And so when the building when the first earthquake occurred, we didn't we didn't do anything, which was amazing. And in hindsight, I've asked myself many times, why didn't we realize that employees had been traumatized by the fact that the First Interstate tower moved? Unbelievable. It scared me to death. And if I were scared, and I'm a Californian and been through this, I could only imagine how other people felt at the time that that building started to move. When we had the fire is when we woke up and realized that we needed to deal with the trauma. And that's what it is. Now they call it critical incident stress debriefing. Big deal. But it's trauma counseling. And we recognized that our employees were traumatized, and they were at all different levels of the grief cycle, whether it was shock, dismay, anger, depression, sadness. Nobody was at grudging acceptance. Mm-hmm. And so we worked with a consulting psychologist to put a program together, and we ran each and every employee through it. And we trained our managers on how to recognize the fact that employees were suffering. And so in the book, there's a laundry list of symptoms, and not everybody responds at the same time. I tend to be a dispassionate person. So when there's a shock, I can get over that relatively quickly. Ted, you might not. You might be really upset. And when I say something like, oh, come on, get over it, you're not ready to get over it. And so we worked with our managers to help them understand that just because maybe they were tough and ready, it didn't mean that the employees were, and that when they started to see Friday, Monday absenteeism or acting out or anger from people that weren't that way, that these were symptoms of the underlying problem.
Well, what I was going to ask is, how do you see that correlating with the ramifications with the business itself when people have this trauma? Is it absenteeism? Is it difficulty getting along with each other? How does that play out?
Anyway? All of those things. That if the whole key to business resumption is that since businesses are comprised of human beings, that the faster you can get them back to being productive, the faster the business can get back up and running. And so the behaviors that you see are exactly what you said: absenteeism, anger, not getting along with coworkers, maybe coming in smelling of alcohol, picking fights, sadness, crying unexpectedly, men and women, just all different kinds of things. And that instead of the typical supervisory response of, I'm going to write you up, was, listen, you're having problems. It's bothering everybody in the department. We want you to go to employee assistance and have a meeting. And we don't care what's said there. We're not interested. It's none of our business. But you need help, and you're going to go get it. And they did. And so we had a few employees, not a lot, who really couldn't get over the fact that they had been traumatized. But we worked with them.
How effective, and I guess you just answered that question, but how effective is the trauma management by the company for the people that are having that problem? Is it something that really helps everyone through it, or is there only a certain percent? Or how does that all work? Because that part's really interesting to me, and how this whole thing affects the
Not every person. Employee is going to be affected emotionally. So, like, I was not affected a lot. I was scared when we had the earthquake and very bothered about the fire. I mean, it was gut-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
So not all employees are impacted, but the ones that were responded.
They do respond.
They
well.
Responded because it gave them a chance to get to, I guess it's called catharsis, to get out their anxiety or whatever mm-hmm. it was that was bothering them. There was a lot of fear. We can talk about it when we come back.
Okay.
Well, good. Exactly. Well, one of the things that you talk about several places in the book, and it's a huge issue, and it's not dealt with in most other venues, is substance abuse. And that with people that have some, and everybody that works in a work environment knows who these people are. They just don't talk about it. And then all of a sudden, when you have an event like this, and the stress kicks in, the substance abusers can become a major significant problem. And that's something that management has to contend with, because some of these people are in positions of responsible charge, or they're in key positions. physicians that keep the flow working, what have you. So you take the disaster, and it's now compounded by people with, and it's not just substance abuse. Yeah. It's problems at home. It's problems financial. It's whatever. Or maybe they're having problems at work. It's also a great opportunity for that quiet person in the back room you never thought much about. Maybe he's in the mail room or shipping receiving or an inspection floor or something that suddenly just prevails as the stronghold because they do not become emotionally involved. And yeah. When we come back, I'll read a quote here from our very own Santa Barbara City Fire retired Jack Armstrong. Visiting today with Catherine McKee, President, Santa Barbara Chapter, American Red Cross, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan, working the board for us on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, newspress.com. Back in a moment.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Catherine McKee, who is a new author, co-author of Leading People Through Disasters, been involved with human resources for many years. She is president of American Red Cross Santa Barbara Chapter, and she's also the past chair, the National Human Resources Management, well qualified in this subject and taking a little bit different take on it. And Mike, you got some.
Well, let's
get
back into the individuals. Veteran Incident Commander Jack Armstrong says, manage your emotional side as you take control of the situation. If you act like you're in control, then you become in control. And that's absolutely the truth. Where is everyone? Are employees safe? Do employees have the basics or the considerations that need to be taken into account by management of any business, which is essentially the same thing in public safety? Is the community safe? Is our infrastructure? Those kind, it's the same issues, but it's now compartmentalized at a corporate level or within the body of an organization. And Jack's perfectly competent. I mean, he's retired from Santa Barbara City Fire and seen more than his share of disasters and what have you. That's a lot easier said than done. I mean, cops and firefighters and military, they go through psychological training and hiring processes. These are people that kind of disassociate themselves from the emotional side very easily. That's how they're trained. But how do you take an HR person who's got four kids at home and the wife and the dog and the parakeet and lives a pretty happy, carefree life, and who now has 3,000 employees that are displaced and a company CEO and board of directors screaming at her, get going, get going? How does that person deal with it?
Well, it's called leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the basic tenets of leadership, according to a couple of people, Kuzes and Posner, for example, that talk about modeling the way. In other words, the way that you behave sets the tone for how the situation will be managed. And so it's really looking at your demeanor, your own self-control, emotional intelligence, your ability to respond quickly and get yourself under control so that you, in fact, can set an example and lead the way, whether it's leading the way out of a theater or whether it's leading the way out of down the staircase or whatever it is, that your persona and the way that you act will help calm the situation. And the tone of voice that you use so that it's a commanding voice, but it's not a shaky voice. As best as you can control it, you have to get yourself.
Well, and that's where, to me, institutional discipline and structure becomes very, very important. That's why firefighters and police officers wear uniforms. It's why their office environments are set up the way they are, because they're in this mindset. It's actually walking in almost like a theater to get you in preparedness for it. There's corporations that are very structured. It's suit and tie. You talk about that throughout the book, about the tightness of the banking industry. I mean, it's a lot more loose today than it used to be. And what that culture, but that culture tends to lead to discipline and structure and reinforcing that kind of thing versus other organizations that are much looser, more carefree. And then all of a sudden a situation strikes and you need all of that. You need, as you talk about in the book, to get into that military structural mindset and get away from the corporate mindset. That's a transition that would be almost impossible in many civilian applications.
Well, it helps for those organizations that are enlightened to drill. And one of the things that you must do, and we say it in the book, and I've heard the business continuity people say it, is practice, practice, practice. And the scenarios that you develop, that you drill against, are incredibly important. And one of them that nobody has ever planned for, and you'd mentioned this earlier on this morning, is the violence in the workplace, and especially a murder. And so when I talk to people, and I did the other day at ABC TV, we say, what scenarios do you have? Do you have earthquake? Oh, yeah, tornadoes, hurricanes, bomb, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what about murder? And blank stare. Because what happens when there's a murder is it's an incredibly traumatic occurrence. Obviously, somebody's dead. Everybody there is impacted, in the building is impacted. It happened out here in Goleta at the Postal Service.
It's actually happened several times in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
People forget.
That's right. And so it has a horrific impact on people. And so by practicing, by drilling, by being prepared for whatever, and no matter whatever you prepare for isn't what's going to happen. So if you prepare for the earthquake, then you have a building fire. Or you prepare for the building fire and your CEO passes away suddenly in a taxi in London, which happened to Texas Instruments. And that was a trauma for that organization. Mm-hmm. It stopped everybody cold. They love that guy. And now he's gone. What are they going to do? Luckily, they had a succession plan in place.
Well, one of the keys that I have, because I deal a lot with the corporate security world, and you talk about CEOs and things that are done in the corporate world to protect CEOs, the CFO, the corporate counsel, I mean, there's key players that must be protected, and how they travel and advance work and things that are done. You can tell that there's some companies that take this very seriously, and they're prepared for it. When you look at the incident that occurred in Goleta at the postal sorting place, that either is the largest or one of the largest workplace violent incidents in the world. There was also one that people don't remember at Southern California Edison facility just down the street. There was a rather significant workplace murder that was done in the Employment Development Department in Ventura, right next to a bunch of law offices, that really got to be ugly because it was a termination of a pursuit and guys weren't into the bill. I mean, it was all dramatic Starsky and Hutch stuff. The only problem is this one's for real. And it caused all kinds of problems. And those that aren't prepared, this is not the time to have it. And you talk about drilling, and we talk a lot on this show about training, and you and I work on many, many training programs, but there's a huge difference between training and drilling and practice. You use the word practice, and what came into my head is musical practice, you know, hours upon hours upon hours of sitting there in front of that metronome playing the same measures over and over and over and over.
So you act without thinking.
Yeah, it becomes muscle memory.
Right.
It's the same thing with sports. It's the same thing with firearms. I mean, there's a multitude of different tasks. Carpenters with their hammers and stuff. How does a guy drive that nail in with what? I mean, it's practice. And so how do you get that? There's no money in that. It's cost expense from somebody saying, well, I'm not going to pull guys off my assembly line and go teach them how to do fire extinguishers or how to evacuate 2,500 people from my building and shut the thing down and then power it back up. I'm not going to practice that. You're out of your mind. Well, in reality, you should be practicing that, because when you actually do need it, you may not have to power everything down.
Right. Now, you may not want to turn off the gas because in a drill, but you want people to know where to go and how to do it and to know where the tool is.
What tool should be accessible.
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing. Yeah.
You know, the companies that have other criteria, like I use Raytheon. Now, there's a big industrial organization, but they're great because they've got in-house security, they've got in-house fire brigade, they've got in-house intelligence, they got everything you need to be able to implement all this kinds of stuff. But they've also got the financial wherewithal, and they've got the governmental mandates, and they've got all this stuff that's pushed down upon them. But for the little mom and pop shop of 15 people who's just trying to make payroll every other week, or just trying to stay ahead of the phone bill, or you know, whatever it may be, you know, it's different.
Well, for mom and pop, there's a great website called ready.gov.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go and download simple to use forms that help you deal with your backup, which can be nothing more perhaps than a flash drive.
Mm-hmm. And the checklists are there.
The checklist. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful website for the small business.
You know, the IT issue is becoming more and more and more important. And when I think of the banking industry, if I had to pick one word to describe banks, I would say computers. Because if you don't have a computer in the bank, the idea that they're all going to go back and use an abacuses and ledger sheets seems a little unlikely. And yet that's exactly what happened during Cortina, is that's what they ended up doing. I mean, how many clerks and tellers today would even know what you're talking about? I mean, it used to be you had to balance your drawer out before you leave. They don't even have to do that anymore, which to me is unconscionable, but that bank's not around anymore, so we can kind of see why. But we're up to our next break, visiting today with Catherine McKee, President, Santa Barbara County Chapter, American Red Cross, and a litany of other organizations, including past foreman of the Santa Barbara Grand Jury. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan, Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB, AM 1290. Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. Back in a minute.
Folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today, we're visiting with Catherine McKee, and Catherine is co-author of a book called Leading People Through Disasters, and she's been involved with human resources for many years. She's now the president of the American Red Cross Santa Barbara chapter. She's also the past chair of the National Human Resources Management, and we're really glad to have you here talking to us about this thing. And Mike.
Well, let's get some information out there. That's one of the things that people like about our show is we put stuff out there that's substantive. So we turn to page 53, and we talk about 10 common mistakes. And I'm going to read through these real quick, and we'll come back and comment on them. Number one, the no senior management support. If management's not involved or engaged in your emergency plan, you don't have a plan,
That's right. You
can't fight management. Lack of employee buy-in. It works in reverse. If the employees are just blowing it off, it's not being important. And we talked to an individual just this morning before the show that said it took 3 years for their organization to get buy-in. This was from middle and upper management saying this is just nonsense, it's just noise, it's somebody's having to comply with something that took them 3 years. But at the point of 3 years, they bought in and it paid off. Insufficient planning. Lack of training and practice, and practice is the word that's highlighted. No designated leader. I mean, who's in charge? And we learned that very quickly in the VOAD drill. Who's in charge? Where's your line of command? Failure to keep the plan up to date. No method of alerting employees. And here's a big one that'll bite you. OSHA regulations not part of the plan. If you want to have a nightmare in your company, get OSHA in there looking around and trying to find out what you're not complying with. No procedures for shutting down critical equipment and or keeping it alive. I think at UCSB, there's things going on in laboratory environment that cannot be turned off no matter what. And so do you have a plan for that? UCSB certainly does. Employees not told what actions to take in an emergency. Those are the big 10. And which ones stand out for you, Catherine? I mean, the OSHA one stands out to me because I know what happens when OSHA shows up. But which one stands out to you?
Well, obviously the first one, no senior management support. If you don't have that, you can't have a plan. And when you look at there are about three different protocols for doing business continuity planning. And don't ask me the names of them; they're complicated. But they're mentioned in the book, and their websites are given. But the first thing that you must have when you start to do this kind of planning is a commitment from the senior leadership team that they are in favor of and will back this kind of effort, and then a vision statement that they are supposed to craft that leads the way so that the direct reports to the senior team can actually sit down and start to do the planning. So that one is absolutely important. There are several that are linked, the training and practice and alerting employees and the fact that employees need to know what they're supposed to do and the roles that they're supposed to play. In the city of Santa Barbara and the city of Beverly Hills, both of whom I know a lot about, they're following the standard employee standard emergency management system, SEMS.
Right.
And so they all organize the same way, and the employees go into disaster mode and their job descriptions automatically change so that they know exactly what their roles are, both to protect the city and the city's plan and to protect the community. So those just leap out at me. The fact that employees don't buy in is related also to planning and training. And the leadership, the incident commander, that is a position that needs to be described and someone selected, or more than one person selected, one for each geographical location perhaps, or one depending on the type of emergency or disaster that it is, so that you have people that are your internal resource experts that pick up and take over, and the CEO and the senior leadership team get busy looking at what they need to look at, and the incident commander runs the incident.
I think that one of the refreshing things about this book is nowhere in here does it say call 911.
Yeah.
And that's true, because every emergency plan that I've ever read, any emergency plan that I've been a party to in writing or whatever, has in there call 911. Well, what do you do if you are 911? And the other
911 is busy, which
yeah.
often
yeah. Well, that's
I'm
true.
Sorry, we can't come that's to the phone right now, but your call is important to us.
There's a great thing about a 911 skit at the introduction of the movie Cop. If you want to see something that's funny with 911, get the movie Cop and watch the first 5-10 minutes of it. But anyway, the issue being is that we talk so much about emergency management and planning, and it's all about the fire department, the cops, and everybody in the ambulance shows up, they do their thing, and they all go away, and that's the end of the show. Well, that's where all of this kicks in and begins, and there is no 911 for business. It's you. You're standing there, and you may be the CEO, and you may also be the janitor, and you've got all of these things that need to be taking place. And one of the comments in here, it is essential that the planning be grounded in reality rather than in theory. And I think that that word reality really is the nail that doesn't get driven hard enough, is
yeah.
that what is the reality of your situation if you lose all your power, if you lose all your water, if you're going to be without communications for 48 or 72 hours, what is the reality of that? You could easily be, and this is what the next paragraph talks about, the CEO, possibly along with the board of directors, must make it clear that such planning is a top priority. Not only may the lives be at stake, but the business itself could perish. And we see that a lot in disasters. And we don't necessarily need the big earthquake or the big fire. It can be something fairly insignificant that cripples your company and you're out of business. You're done. Mm-hmm. You're bankrupt. And that's stuff that people, I just don't think that they're tuned in to that basis of reality.
Yeah. If you're an ice cream maker and you lose power and you don't have a backup generator and
you're
there isn't any
cream.
Power for 48 hours or 72, which can happen, then what do? You've got spoiling milk or cream or whatever.
Right. Well, one of the things that we harp on in residential situations, and I think it happens in this environment as well, is the fact that everyone that involved needs to have something to do when there's an emergency, have some sort of list of things that they are assigned tasks, and I am different for different kinds of emergencies. But as soon as people have a role to play, then it lends some sort of focus, and they don't get as panicked, and they're not as do you see that in the process? Does that work that way in the office as well? I mean, it would seem to me that it would be helpful.
Well, the way that we did it at First Interstate and Standard Chartered Bank, there were certain employees who had specific roles to play. So we had floor wardens, we had toe taggers. If there were dead bodies, we mm-hmm. had body bags. There were people that were to deal with those things, and we did drills so that people could practice, as grisly as that sounds. Not all employees had a role to play, but employees knew where to go and how to get out of the building if that were going to be the scenario, or where to shelter in place. And the fact that we had supplies on each of our floors, they were called the earthquake bags at first, and then they were called the disaster bags. But mm-hmm. they had things in them like radio transmitters and whatnot so that people could communicate, and mm-hmm. dried food and blankets and so forth. But
that was
what we did, so that people could be as prepared as possible for what to do in case of a disaster and you were stuck in a 62-story building.
Where to aggregate, where to move
where to
towards,
aggregate,
what to
or
do.
A, mm-hmm. or a 70-story or 120-story
well.
Building.
Well, we see here on page 41, again, about the importance of being able to shift from a standard corporate structure into the ICS or command and control, old-fashioned military is the term that you folks use. And how many organizations can make that transition, and who may? Because that would suggest that potentially your corporate security director becomes the guy in charge of your company with the emergency management side of things. It may mean your HR or your corporate counsel becomes much more critical. Your risk manager becomes one of the main players.
Right.
And because risk management is now transferred from the illusionary what-if scenarios to it's actually happening and we need to CYA. And this is what we need need to do. And the risk managers reaching for the red book of the worst case scenarios to make sure that they're mitigating those worst case scenarios as quickly as we can, particularly if employees are getting hurt. So getting a high sign from the ever diligent Richard Dugan on the slide pots, visiting today with Kathy McKee, President, Santa Barbara Chapter, American Red Cross. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, back in just a minute. It's KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, newspress.com.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Catherine McKee, who's a co-author of a book called Leading People Through Disaster. Very interesting book, and we've been discussing it, and we're going to discuss it a little bit more here. This is our last segment. She's the president of the American Red Cross Santa Barbara Chapter and many other things in that human resources world. Mike, you've got...
We were talking during the break about an example with the security director. You know, why don't we go back over that?
Yeah, you mentioned that sometimes the security director might take over being the incident commander, and when the Rodney King trial in Los Angeles came to an end and the police officers who had beat him 56 times with billy clubs were acquitted of that, the city erupted not only in flames but rioting and God knows what all. And, of course, in that 62-story building that had once caught on fire, we had employees, and we needed to evacuate. The building would be evacuated floor by floor. And the security director became the incident commander. Did we have a civil disturbance emergency plan? Absolutely not. Did we end up with one? Yes, we did. Did we have another riot? No, we didn't. Because when the O.J. Simpson trial happened, we were ready. Everybody was ready in case that verdict went the wrong way, according to some. But we were ready, and the security director did a very fine job of helping us learn how to deal with civil disturbance and how to help employees who either lived in the area that was under siege or we all had to drive through it to get home. And mm-hmm. It was very, very scary for all of us.
Well, I was at the Bank of America Central Vault when that happened. And Bank of America did have a plan, not one that I'm going to advertise what it was, but they had a plan at the Central Vault. And L.A. was a very spooky place that night.
It was
very, very unusual. Let's talk about how to get the book. There's a website, leadingpeoplethroughdisasters.com. That's leadingpeoplethroughdisasters.com, and, of course, amazon.com.
Yes, Amazon is the best place. You can order it from the publisher if you're interested in quantity orders, and that information is on the website. Amazon is closed. We don't have any chain bookstores anymore. I don't even know, I should know, if Chaucer's carries it. But it's a niche book, and it's the kind of book that shows like this can help get the word out about its value to people.
Well, you know, I would suggest two books to people. One is yours as a textbook type of thing for putting together a program for your company, is you've got this. And the how-to would be the American Red Cross's disaster continuity booklet, which mm-hmm. is probably one of the best. They've also got it on CD, it has the forms and what have you. It is absolutely the best that's out there, bar none. And so with these two publications, you can actually get a pretty good plan put together that you can then start practicing and training. Also, if you haven't, your company isn't involved, get involved with VOAD, which is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disasters, which is a bunch of companies just like yours. There's CARE, Community Action Emergency Response, which are people that are involved in the manufacturing world. You've got the big boys like Raytheon and UCSB and Cree and others that are all there. Fluor is a member that deal with a lot of very interesting problems that would come in any large-scale event. And there's other organizations that you can belong to here that don't cost a dime. There's no membership they speak of. There's also the public information component of all of this, which we didn't get into today, but that's also issues. And there's the EPIC group, which is geared primarily to public safety and public organizations. But we've been exploring in getting into the larger employers here is how to get them involved. We saw that during the Hays case of CETA Fire, Ted and I were on the air with a lot of employers and employees wanting to know, how do I get to work? We addressed a lot of those kinds of problems. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you very much for taking time out to be here. So, again, Amazon.com or www, Leading People Through Disaster. And that brings us to Dial Tone on Community Alert. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board. Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll see you next week. The news is next. Thank you for listening.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.